Doc Rivers continues to time and time again not get it when it comes to getting... Oh!
Let him play!
He wins. Great steak. Smells like poop.
Honestly, like, if Urban Meyer wants to come to Connecticut, bring him on. I mean, come on. I'll take him, too.
Nia Jackson, I think, weighs 280 pounds.
Oh!
Can we isolate that clip? Nia Jackson weighs 280 pounds. Oh!
Let her play.
From Los Angeles, this is Dave in the City, brought to you by Locks of the Week Radio. Now, here's Dave Medina.
Good evening, sports fans, and a pleasure to have you here for the big basketball show. Good to have you with us from the Dave in the City studios in sunny Southern California, home of people watching the NBA Finals. And along this coast, we've enjoyed a couple of pretty good games. Games 1 and 2, competitive. And at the end of it, a 1-1 series tie. But I also think at the end of it, two things. Things to worry about for both sides. For the defending champion Warriors, accumulating injuries. For the challengers, the Toronto Raptors. One, they really, really let get away. And we're going to break it all down tonight, plus give you some predictions for the rest of the series. Chris and Georgia is with us. And we are ready to go. Let's jump it. The NBA report for June the 4th. We're through two games of the NBA Finals, and it is the broadcaster's dream. The networks love it. Tied 1-1. We're going back to Oracle Arena for game 3. That's coming up on what is it, Friday? It's coming up on Wednesday. Instead of the Thursday that I had been concussed, actually it should be on tonight. In the old days, this game would have been played tonight, but they're gonna, you know, fish it out towards Wednesday. We're gonna talk about the schedule of the latter part of the show, but first we'll get into the games. So let's bring in our co-host, and of course, that would be Chris in Georgia, where the peaches are starting to really start to come into blossom, and that makes me feel good. Hopefully you as well. How's it going, Chris?
Great, Red. Yeah, I had a peach this morning at breakfast on my cereal. That's fantastic, Dave. It's that time of year, buddy. It doesn't last that long, so you got to enjoy them while they're here.
That's really true. It's like maybe like a month. I savor it. I agree. I'm with you on that. We savor the peach season. Oh, man. The first time that you had the peaches in Georgia, did you notice a difference between them and, like, the ones you had? Or were they the same? I guess maybe they were the same in New York, too.
For one thing, Georgia has a reputation for peaches. The state of South Carolina actually produces more peaches than Georgia, believe it or not. But to answer your question... Yeah, I don't think I've ever had a bad peach here. I really haven't. Like, sometimes you can get a, you know, sometimes you get one that doesn't, it's not very sweet, and it's just kind of like, it doesn't, it's just, you know, the texture doesn't feel right when you're, you know.
Right.
I don't think I've ever had a bad peach here. I would say that's the difference.
Wow. Oh, that sounds like a dream come true for me. You know, anywhere else, it's hit and miss. Sometimes they're great, sometimes they're not. But to have, like, that kind of consistency, you got it good. You're in the hot spot for the peach.
Yep.
Yeah, I like it. So with that in mind, we'll have those peaches ready to go for the remainder of this NBA Finals. A good Finals, like two games, both of them were pretty competitive, but missed opportunities in both games. But we'll focus on game 2 since it's the more recent of the two games. And we started the series in Toronto, which added a pretty good wrinkle to the series because it meant that the Raptors started off with home court advantage. Very, very different because the Warriors were so accustomed to having that first game at home, but not the case this time. So you had game 1. Toronto did their job. They had a big lead. They kept maintaining that lead throughout game 1, and they won. Good game. Game 2, very different story. They had an 8-point lead at halftime. Then they allowed an 18-0 run to the Warriors. And, you know, I really thought that Boogie Cousins had a role in that because he was really making the Raptors frustrated when he was on offense and getting the ball to other people, and guys were open, and everybody was making shots. Conversely, on the other side, the Raptors, you know, they really got away from their game, and they started really just settling for bad shots, just chucking three-pointers, and some of those three-pointers, they were wide open, and they were missing them. So, in essence, I thought that they really let them back into this game with that terrible run. And, you know, you got to give the Warriors a lot of credit, but game two was a very fascinating game because then, Chris, as you saw at the end, the Warriors couldn't score. They didn't score for the last 5 minutes until Iguodala hit the three-pointer to clinch it. So a lot to talk about here in game two. Let's get your thoughts on what you've seen so far.
Yeah, game two was exciting because it came down really to the final shot, but it wasn't. It wasn't a pretty game, let's put it that way. You know, the where Toronto was scoreless was kind of tough to watch. And I mean, yeah, you got to give Golden State credit, but there were a lot of just easy misses, and Toronto looked a little impatient, just kind of, you know, settling for like a pull-up jumper, you know, from like 15, 20 feet rather than, you know, moving the ball around a little bit. Yeah, it was just, it was exciting, but like I said, it wasn't, you know, you're not going to tuck that one away and put it in the vault for future viewing. Cause it was kind of ugly. And ugly too were the injuries. I'm sure we'll get to this, but, yeah, I think part of the reason Golden State got so ice cold was it was really Steph and a cast of backups. I mean, Cousins, you know, is now he's not exactly what he once was. But you're right, he did have a nice game. He had 10 points, 11 assists, or 11 rebounds. Really had just cushions. He made some really nice passes. One that came to mind in the third quarter, in the middle of that run, where he fed Klay Thompson, who was cutting to the basket. It was a beautiful pass. You're absolutely 100% right. I mean, the Raptors had that game. I mean, there was a time in the first half where I was like, they're going to blow him out here. And it just didn't happen. And Warriors, for whatever reason, came out super hot in the second half, and that was the game right there. I mean, it's just that's the Warriors, man. They get contributions. I mean, Curry didn't have a great game. I mean, he was very good, but you know, it wasn't a great game. But Cousins stepped up and Quinn Cook, the undrafted guard out of Duke, had three three-pointers. I mean, a few of them, you know. That was it. I mean, it's so funny. We respond to game one where Toronto looked so good. I mean, it was a home game for sure, but it looked so good. And we're like, whoa, wait, maybe the Warriors are going to have a lot of trouble. Now it's like, you know, the Warriors come back, win game two on the road. And now it's like, well, can they win four straight? Can they win this in five games? I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure if that's going to happen either, but it's just kind of funny how we kind of maybe overreact a little bit to one game.
Well, it is. I know it's one game, but man, I did feel like this was an opportunity for Toronto, and they're not. And you remember you were texting me at the end of the game where it was still pretty close, and I think what you said was the Raptors have had so many chances. Like they had like three shots to make that three pointer near the end of the game. And it was just like, just kind of reminded you of what that game was like. Yeah. It was a frustrating experience. And I will ask you a follow-up to all of that. When the score was Warriors up by 3 points and there were 26 seconds to go, Did you think they should have fouled right there?
Wait, say that again.
Should Toronto have fouled down 3 points and there's 26 seconds to go? I mean, I know it's a 3-point game, but...
Well, I think their thinking was, look, Golden State's been so cold. We're going to get it. We'll get the ball back with, you know, we're not going to get the ball back with 3 seconds. We're going to get it, or, you know, 2 seconds or whatever. They're going to shoot before, well before the shot clock expires, and we'll, you know, we'll get the ball back. And I didn't have a problem. I remember you saying in real time that they should have fouled. I didn't have a serious problem with that just because the Warriors were so cold. It was just like, and Toronto's, you know, Toronto's a really good defensive team. And so that team, that didn't bother me.
Well, here's the thing about that. I think you play the momentum. I see that. But the issue is that you're putting it, you're not extending the game. And I think with that little time left, I think you need to extend the game just to give yourself every opportunity. Because what if somebody hits a shot? Then it's over. And it did. And Iguodala was the one that hit the shot. I just think that that's the kind of decision you make when you make a lot of assumptions. But I mean, I see the strategy. Like, you're kind of riding the cold hand in this case. But from my point of view, I'm like, yeah, I know we're down three. I know they've been shooting like crap, but I think you extend the game. You foul somebody that's not a great three-point shooter, or free throw shooter if you can. People are calling foul Draymond Green. I mean, it's not that easy, you guys. It's not like, oh, let's just pick the guy that's going to get the ball.
Right. That 100% is not easy. And, like, if they get the ball in Curry's hands, forget it.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, you don't want to pick and choose who you're fouling. Just foul somebody, you know. Try to get the force the ball somebody, but you can't assume it's going to get there. So it's like, I'm going to pick Draymond and then point to him and then he gets his free throws. So anyway.
I totally see your point. I don't know. I didn't have as much of a problem with that just because, like I said, they were just ice cold at that point in the game. Of course, Toronto was too, and Toronto was missing shot after shot. I'm fine with that. I was just getting frustrated watching them on offense, just missing easy buckets.
I am really surprised that they got away from what worked, driving to the hoop, trying to get the basket, kicking out, looking for the open man. And they were doing so well with that in game one. They were doing pretty well with it in the East Finals. And then here we are, second half. They bring in, and I really think that, I mean, no one said this, but, and me, I might be a clown just saying this, but I really think that Cousins is the reason why they started to panic. Because I just think that just really threw them off. Like, not to say that they didn't have length before, but something about the way that Boogie Cousins was playing that night, because it all happened when he was on the court. He was really screwing them up. And I don't know, maybe they panicked. I don't really know how to explain it, but they didn't. They really got away from their game, and it just looked like they were nervous, and they were just like, let's just shoot this bad shot. And like you said, even like the close misses, they had like, they had it along the base. They had it really close to the hoop, and they were missing those shots. That's a tough watch, especially if you're a Toronto fan.
Yeah, for sure. Wait, so you kind of broke up there. You were saying that they in down the stretch that in game two that Boogie might have been kind of throwing them off their game.
I wouldn't necessarily say down the stretch. I would say at the beginning of the third quarter, because that's when they really started using him.
Oh, you're saying Boogie was instrumental
that
18. Yeah, yeah. Okay, totally agree. Yes. Yeah. No, totally agree. Yeah, Boogie was huge. I mean, there's no doubt about it. Absolutely. He was, in many ways, he was the most important player on that team because he does so much and you forget how good this guy is. And we haven't even talked about the injuries, but Clay got hurt with about 11 minutes in the fourth quarter and hurt his hamstring. He actually played a little while. Do you want to get into the injuries? Because there were a few.
Oh yeah.
In this game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Clay is a big one. I mean.
Yeah, Clay was the big one. Cause, yeah. Go ahead. Sorry.
All I was gonna say is that it was it's been ruled to be a hamstring strain. He will probably play game 3, but his effectiveness is very questionable, and that's a huge one.
Yeah, he on the play looked like he stuck his leg out kind of awkwardly, and it almost looked like he was kind of, I don't know, it didn't look normal. It was like he kind of stuck his leg out to try to draw contact on the defender, who was standing maybe slightly to his right. And when he came down, he just kind of, he just kind of overextended it. I'm not sure exactly how he injured it. But then at a certain point, he started grabbing the hamstring and just came out. And then they pulled it out of the game. And then next thing you know, you got the camera shot of him walking to the locker room. So you're like, wait, what's going on here? But, yeah, as you said, like, he's reportedly going to play tomorrow night, Wednesday, game 3 in Oakland. I'm with you. I'm kind of skeptical about how effective someone can be with a hamstring injury. It's certainly, you would think it's going to affect his shooting, his defense, and all that. So that's something to watch. The other injury was Kevon Looney, who I've kind of jumped on the Kevon Looney bandwagon. I've just been like a big fan of his play. Always been a pretty good defensive player, but he's like kind of been more important on the offensive end too. And he came down really hard in the first half, right before the half. And it was, I guess he's out for the series. I mean, that's it. So that's another big loss. And I mean, you're talking about a team that are already missing KD. They just got Cousins back. Cousins only played 8 minutes in game 1. And we talked about how effective he was in game 2. So that's been huge. But, Curry, of course, in the last series had that hand injury. Clay now. And Looney, so they're kind of like the walking wounded at this point. And so it'll be interesting to see what happens. Of course, Toronto, with Kawhi's been definitely favoring his quad. So they're not exactly healthy either. So it might be a war of attrition here. We're seeing a lot in the next few games.
Yeah, this is getting very dramatic for Golden State suddenly. These are very big. These are very key players getting hurt. We already talked about Durant. He's not playing game 3. And I think it's pretty clear that he's not expected to play the rest of the series either. It really doesn't seem like there's going to be much that he will even be in a game. And that's enough of a barrier, but then having all the other guys, Iguodala isn't really doing so well either. He seems to be okay, but I think he's nursing some kind of injury as well.
No, you're right. I totally forgot. That's a good point. He didn't finish game 1. He got hurt in game 1, and he was injured. Was it – which series was that? It wasn't the Portland series. It was before that. So he's been banged up too. I can't remember now which series that was where he got hurt. All the games are kind of blending together, but yeah, you're right. I mean, they're really banged up, and I'm not even like, I don't know. I'm just, I think at a certain point, it's like, do we really want to see like, the Quinn Cooks of the world taking big shots? I mean, I don't know. I mean, after a while, it's like, okay, Steph is great, but if it's Steph and like 4 nobodies, it's fan kind of loses out, don't you think?
Absolutely. I mean, look, it's, you might think, well, this will increase the chances of the upset, but if you're going to have Toronto win a series and all those guys are out, I don't think that's really that we lose. You're right. It's just it's not going to be as good a series without all those guys playing. It's that simple. Like Kevin Durant, that's good. And you know, that's one thing because it kind of gives you a definitive feel for, okay, did they really need him all those years when they were winning titles? But these other guys are really, this is really getting a little much. Like I think even if you're rooting against Golden State, like let's say I am, or a bunch of people, or all that entire chart other than two states was on Twitter, you still don't want that because you can't say you beat the Warriors if like Steph is, I'm sorry, if Steph's banged up a little bit and Klay's really banged up and Kevon Looney's out for the series. He's, like you said, he's been playing pretty well. He's been a really good bench contributor. Further, because these guys are hurt, and I'm sorry, not because they're hurt, but because the bench has just not been that good this year, these injuries are going to be much tougher for Golden State than they would have been if they had a better bench. So they kind of go hand in hand. Like they don't have much depth, and guys are getting hurt. But because the guys are getting hurt, that hurts their depth too. So it's like, this is a real problem now. Like I it's not keeping me from thinking that they'll win the series. I still think they're going to win the series, but it's just going to make it really tough, and it's Kerr's going to have a really big challenge trying to get them to win game three.
Yeah, I just got to see what we get out of Klay, because, you know, like I said, I'm skeptical. Maybe he's okay. Maybe that, in, you know, hamstring injury wasn't too severe, and he'll come back and he'll be, you know, he'll be making his shots, and we got the Splash Brothers and all as well. But I need to see that first. But yeah, it's I don't know what the answer is. I mean, part of me thinks too is this, that, you know, this is five straight years ago. And I mean, how many playing as a group, and you just, you know, it's just, it takes its toll. You know what I mean? I mean, if you're making the finals every single year, you know, that's another, what is that? Like, you know, 20 games a season or something like that. Right. I mean, it's over a full season of games that you tack on to, you know, to the 82 game season. So, I don't know what the solution is, but I'd start with shortening the playoffs for one. I just think, you know, top eight teams, top four in each conference goes, and then everyone else stays home. And I think that'd be a good starting point, but. But it's just, like I said, I mean, do you really want, you know, I mean, I on the Toronto side, I was like, get the ball to Danny Green, let him shoot it. Like, I mean, that players to make people the same place. And, I don't know. I think I'm like everyone else. I want to see the stars, on the big stage.
Yeah, I mean, we can talk about that maybe a little later on as far as scheduling, but is it hurting? Yeah, I think it is, but I think it's the bigger point from what I see is just the accumulation of all these runs. I mean, when you make five finals in a row, it's going to hit you at some point. And to really put it in perspective, I mean, LeBron went to seven straight finals as a member of various teams, and now here he is completely broken down, and then he didn't even make the playoffs. So I think that gives you an idea that eventually players will break down when you're going through that many deep playoff runs in a row. I mean, you certainly didn't. We've seen it with our teams at various points in our lives. Even the Celtics of the 80s, that took them down. Lakers of the 80s and the late 80s, they started wearing out too. So everybody goes through that. But this is basically, I don't know if I would call this a last stand for the Warriors, but it seems like this is going to be their greatest challenge in terms of their adversity, because they're talking about just in general, not as good a team as the previous four teams were. And then you go into, is that right? They've been to every final since 2015, 15, 16. Yeah, I think it's right. That's kind of amazing. If you think about it,
Totally. I mean, we're witnessing greatness here, Dave. I mean, love them or hate them. This is an all-time team.
100%. 100%. I mean, I have my things about them, but I have so much respect for that team. And they've gotten it done. Absolutely. It's been pretty remarkable. So we'll go, you know, I think there's not going to be any asterisks or anything in this one because, like, they've had guys, significant guys hurt throughout the playoffs, and it's really hitting them hard. So if they come out of this with a win, I mean, all the credit to them. So we'll see. Now, let's go back to the Raptors for a bit. They are relatively healthy. The one thing I noticed, this is just me being a Mongo watching this, not really putting a lot of insight in this, but it doesn't seem like Kawhi is taking over games like he had been before, and I think you got to give the Warriors a lot of credit for that. I don't think they're just letting him take over a game. But it also does point to some, as I mentioned in the beginning, some balance with these other players, and a lot of guys have stepped up. Siakam in game one, really good, and other guys too. But it's not a one-man team right now. But it does make me wonder, like, I have to go back and look at what Kawhi was doing in games one and two. I'm sure he's doing pretty well, but he hasn't really been able to take over the game at any point yet. And, you know, that doesn't mean anything, but I just think that's interesting. What do you think as far as Kawhi?
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think he's been okay. You know, I mean, the game one was the Pascal Siakam game where he scored 32 points and Kawhi had like a quiet 23. But importantly, he was like 5 for 14 from the floor. I mean, just not really not what you'd hope for. And I really do think he's just battling injuries right now, and that's what we're looking at. And honestly, like Siakam was terrible in game two, Yeah, I just want to check the box score because just need to double check that one. But in game two, Siakam, yeah, he was 5 for 18 from the floor. He had 12 points. Kawhi did have 34 in game two, but yeah, no one else, like, you know, Kyle Lowry got in foul trouble early and that hurt them. And Van Vliet might have been, you know, their most capable second scorer after Kawhi. It was that kind of game. But that was the other thing too, is just that it seemed to me they were blowing the whistle like a lot in game two. And I mean, Lowry, I think Lowry had, he might have had 4 fouls in the first half. Cousins got in foul trouble pretty early too. It just, I feel like it might have been just calling him really tight and, it kind of diminished my enjoyment of the game.
On both sides,
I'm not necessarily rooting. I'm actually not rooting for either team. I mean, I want to see a good series, but it was just, I didn't think it was, officiated that well.
Go
ahead. What were you going to say?
I was actually just going to jump in and say I didn't really see a lean, and you said the same thing basically. So, that'll happen sometimes. I always have this feeling like the league tries to call certain games tighter than others, as if there was some kind of way to keep other teams in the series. But, I didn't really didn't gather that kind of intent with the officiating on Sunday night. It just was just guys being too picky about the officiating, and I hate it too. I just, like, if you had to pick one, pick the one where they let everything go. Like, that's the one if you had to pick one, pick that one, because I feel like that way the players have a bigger say in how the game goes. But here, you never want to see a lot of free throws, and so that was unfortunate. But I agree with you. I don't think there was any real lean. I think it didn't really affect it didn't really alter like how the game went, in my opinion. I think both teams had a shot at it. And even after giving up an 18-0 lead, the Raptors still had their chances, and it just wasn't enough.
Yeah, you know, it's so funny. I'm sorry. I'm actually I turned on the last minute of the game because I wanted to, your point about the, you know, not fouling, you know, with what, whatever, 26 seconds left. And I just wanted to see who had the ball. And Draymond had the ball twice on that sequence. There were two opportunities to foul him. And they didn't. So that was clearly, you know, intentional. You know, that was their intent. They were not going to foul. I mean, Livingston had the ball too, but I'm not sure what his free throw numbers. Of course, he would delegate the ball. And they left him wide open. They did not out on that. I'm sorry. I'm going back to a conversation from 5 minutes ago. Sorry about that, Dave.
No, isn't that an interesting study though about fouling in that scenario? I just think that extending the game could have worked to their advantage. I feel like there's no reason not to try it. Like you're gonna lose. I mean, look, the percentage chance of winning by just going all in on one possession, I mean, it's not great, but I feel like while still not great, extending the game, I think it brings you a little bit closer to taking the lead, a little bit closer, especially if you can, not like we were saying, we can't pick and choose who we foul, but the chances of a ball getting to somebody who's not a great free throw shooter, you know, there's a chance. There are some guys on there that could bring a little drama to that situation.
I mean, even Draymond, he's still a 70% free throw shooter. I mean, odds are you foul, you're still down three or four, but you have more time on the clock. I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the, what I was getting at for sure. Like, I think that's a situation where I think Nick Nurse didn't really respond. And similarly, he didn't really respond when they were going down 18-0 in the third quarter too. I don't think this means he's a bad coach suddenly, but I just feel like these are opportunities and he didn't pounce on them. And we've seen coaches pounce on opportunities and somehow find a way to react to adversity. It's not easy, but it did seem like that could, the end of the game more than the 18-0 run. I mean, that was just guys just being really, really good. But yeah, I just keep thinking about that. I'm like, gosh, what if we had given these guys a chance to extend the game, you know, who knows? It could have been very interesting. And I think that's where it takes us. Game three, if you had a prediction on it, Chris, who do you have winning game three?
I'm going to go with the Warriors. They're at home. I mean, part of me really just wants to see this. I just want to see them, you know, prove the doubters draw my heart. Who do I think's going to win? I don't know. I kind of go back and forth, but I think the Warriors take game three at home. And they got, you know, they got the crowd behind them and Curry is going to be fired up. And I don't know. Yeah. I feel like, and you know, it goes just going back to game two, Toronto had everything going in that game. The defense, I mean, not everything, but they were playing great defense in the first half and they were kind of stymieing the Warriors and they couldn't close it out. And that's what great teams do. They just go on these crazy runs. I mean, 18-0 is ridiculous, but I just feel like we're going to see Golden State, you know, just really flex at home and take it. But I don't know. I think this goes seven though, Dave. You know, I really do. I'm starting to think this goes seven.
I think it could go seven. I really do. But here's what I said at the end of game two. Yeah. I think I said, I don't know if I said it to you, but I think I said it to somebody. I think that even though it's game two, I thought that the Raptors lost their chance to win the series. Now, look, I could be wrong, and people are already calling for the mush, but, hey, you had that game at home. You had a lot of opportunities to win. You were in control of that game, and it's just, I'm telling you, that was their chance. They could have gone up 2-0. Then you had all those injuries. It would have taken a lot of effort on the part of the Warriors just to tie up the series, and they could have worn themselves out doing it. Now it's tied if you win game three, then, you know, there's a lot less pressure in game four for Golden State. So, and things like pressure are an intangible factor, but I think that intangibles do actually apply when you talk about basketball. Like, this is the one area where analytics fails. Like, you cannot factor the intangibles. The intangibles cannot be put into a calculation or a formula. Like, that is stuff that you don't really know how people will respond until you've been through it. And while the Warriors have been through a lot, I don't remember them being down 0-2 in a series in the NBA Finals. So that's something to keep in mind. We've seen them do the reverse. We've seen them up 3-1 and then blow the series. But this would have been interesting. And I just feel like now the rest of the entire NBA Finals, the Raptors are going to be fighting from behind. They're going to be fighting.
Oh, yeah. And you lose home court advantage. I mean, that's so huge.
Mm-hmm.
So you're obviously you're in the boat where you think they're going to Golden State wins home three.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I think they're going to win game three. I don't really know if they're going to win by a lot because, again, these injuries are tough. Like, I think they'll pull away late, but I don't think they're going to win by 50. I don't think it's going to be that kind of game. Unless Steph is just so good that he can be shooting 40-footers and then hitting nothing but net. He has those nights. It can be really remarkable. But I do think they'll win. I think they'll win by like 10 or 11 or 12. And then we'll see about game four. But then you're going to be in a position where it's do or die, and essentially it will be a game seven for Toronto. They can win that game, but again, they will not have taken the lead. Then they go back to game five. And with every game, I feel like there's just more and more pressure on both teams. But the team that has the 5 years of NBA Finals experience, I think, is going to have the edge. Right. So
yeah, I definitely agree. The playoff experience is huge, and I just feel like this team has shown so much heart in this run. You know, like without KD.
Yeah.
And I'm with you. I don't think KD is going to be back. I really don't. I mean, they've been so like. I don't want to say tight-lipped. They've left the impression that he'll be back. And they're like, I'm sorry, I need to see him back in uniform. He hasn't set foot on court yet. So right. to say he's gonna be back in play in this series is kind of nuts.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. Like it's a new situation, and I don't see the urgency on the Warriors to bring him back either. I think they are confident enough in their depth but they're confident enough in themselves that they feel like they can win whether he's there or not. And I think that's a good thing. I think that is. So I think it'll make for very interesting rest of the series. Let's see, what else was I going to say?
If I can tack on to that, the other little wrinkle is that KD is a unrestricted free agent after this season.
Mm-hmm.
And so is Clay. And both of them are hurt right now. I mean, like we said, Clay apparently is going to play tomorrow night. But, you know, if there's a possibility of Clay re-injuring his hamstring or, you know, hurting something else because he's favoring that hamstring, I'd have to think he'd give it serious thought. I mean, I you know, he's kind of due a big payday and so is KD. And who knows? That's another, I mean, who knows what goes through the... Keep an eye on.
Yeah, it really puts me in a position where I can't wait for this game. Like I'm looking forward to seeing how it ends up, and if it ends up being the 30-point blowout for Golden State, well, that's great for them. But boy, I tell you, this is interesting, and I think this is where teams got to reach deep. Kawhi strikes me as someone that can reach deep and get to that next gear. And these other guys, we'll find out. I don't know the answer about with Kyle Lowry or Siakam. I don't know the answer with Danny Green. I don't know the answer with who else? Serge Ibaka and guys like that. This is the exciting part of game three, a game that, Chris, you would agree, really should be played right now. Why are we waiting till Wednesday? Like, let's play it.
That's what drives me nuts, is because early in the playoffs, you have these back-to-backers, and like they just kind of jam these games together, and now it's like three nights off, you know? And I don't get it. I don't know. Maybe it's like kind of a reward, you know, for the teams that made it this far and they're a little banged up. We'll give them an extra night off. But, man, let's play the games. I mean, we're 2 weeks away from the draft, Dave. I mean, come on.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think there are two strategies in play with the new NBA final scheduling. The first year I remember it being used was 2016. And that was the year that the Cavs came back on the Warriors and they won the championship for Cleveland. What they did was they structured out so that the finals would encompass three weekends. It was like, it's kind of excessive. It's like, do we need three weekends to expand to watch the NBA finals? That's a long time. But it looked like the payoff from the NBA's point of view, and this is just a speculation by me, was for them to have a game 7 on the Sunday night on Father's Day so that you can get all the marbles. It would follow the U.S. Open, which is also on Father's Day. And so if there was a game 7, then you would get this just giant day of sports. You'd have like the U.S. Open final round. Then it would just segue right into the NBA Finals game 7. And it worked. I mean, they got great ratings that year. But to me, I'm like, that is a lot of moving parts around just for that possible payoff, which would happen, what, like once a decade? Maybe two times a decade. The NBA Finals do not go 7 games very much. So I thought that was a very curious decision to string out the schedule that much with the NBA Finals. It's like people are getting into it. Like people are getting into game 2. A lot of talk about it. And we're just waiting around today instead of watching this game. We could be watching the game that we're talking about right now. And I just think that the NBA missed it. Like, I just think that was one component. The other component is giving these guys extra rest. I sort of get it, but I think by now, I don't think people really care. I think they just want to play. If you ask all the players, don't you think they'd be like, we should be playing right now?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you're cutting into their summer vacation. No, I'm just being facetious, but yeah, I think you made a good point in that there was, you know, after game one, there was so much buzz. I mean, all of a sudden it's like, whoa, the Warriors lost. Wow. You know, I mean, there were people who thought Toronto was going to get swept, and then they come out and they kind of spank Golden State. And then you have to wait a few days. And it's just every single time you're waiting 3 days and people, you know, I mean, they're wrapped up in other things. It kind of diminishes the excitement from game to game. And I don't know. I just feel like, yeah, I totally agree. What is hockey doing? Are there three games?
Not as bad. They did have a couple of gaps of like two extra days off rather than the one. But most of the series has been you play a game, take a day off, play the game the next, you know, like every other day. But in fact, I'll give it to you since we have the luxury of time. I can really run this down. Give me a second here. So they lost.
I always look at hockey because they're so similar. The seasons are the same. Playoffs are the same. So,
yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
And yet, they do a much better job of scheduling these games because they're not afraid to have games take place at the same time in the first round. And I really wish the NBA would get with it and do the same thing. It's just like they're so afraid to have any game overlap with another game. It's like, who cares? We don't care about the freaking Bobcats. We don't care about the freaking Hornets and the Orlando Magic in the first round. Like, we don't care if we see that game or not. Let's just put the games on. Roll them all out. Have a couple of teams play at the same time. It's not a big deal. So, the NHL doesn't have that problem. They end up playing that out. Mike in North Jersey could probably tell you about other minutiae that maybe they could do better. But with the final, they had game one on Monday, the 27th. Game two was on Wednesday. Game three, this is where they start stretching it. They stretched it to Saturday rather than Friday, probably for television. Game four was yesterday or Monday, so that was just 2 days. I think that's 2 days from Saturday. And game five, they'll stretch it again. So they'll have game five on Thursday rather than Wednesday. So that's a little extra time. But Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And then they're going to stretch it again for game six. Yeah, I guess they're starting to do the same thing, huh? Because it's like two extra days. And like an extra day. So it's like instead of 2 days, it's 3 days later. They're going to have game six. And then they'll do the next game on Wednesday instead of Tuesday. And I think that is because they don't want a conflict with the NBA Finals. I think the back end of the Stanley Cup Final is basically judged around where is the NBA putting their game? We don't want it on the same day. And because the NBA screwed around with their schedule, they have to adjust theirs at the same time. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but you know, it's like, I think your point is correct, though, that the NBA wants that Sunday night slot.
Yeah, they're trying to get as many games on Sunday night as they can. And I think it's silly. It's just like,
because it's such a,
yeah, we've all heard about how big a TV night it is. It's, you get the day off, everybody's off, people are coming back from vacation or whatever. And so, you know, I see the metrics of what makes that day a great day for television, but it's, I mean, that it's just getting a little cheesy. Like, you're stretching a series that goes seven games over 3 weeks because you want extra games on Sundays. It just seems funny. Like, I just think that it's a lot. It kills the momentum. It can kill the momentum of a series in terms of the buzz, like you said. So, I don't know. It just seems strange. And I wonder what the people inside the league are saying. We know what the people outside the league are saying. We think it's silly, and we think it's a little unnecessary to go this long stretching out these games. Whereas, if say you played, let's say you had game one on Thursday, right? And then game two, yeah, waiting until Sunday was ridiculous. But if you had game three today, and game four on Thursday, and game five on the next Sunday, and game six on the next Tuesday, and then by the time we do our next NBA report, we'd be pretty close to game seven. Instead, we're going to be barely on what, game five? I don't know. I don't know. NBA might have overdone it on this one.
I agree. I'm definitely, yeah, I wanted a game tonight. I really did.
Yeah.
It'd be cool doing the show, but that's beside the point. I just wanted a game tonight.
It feels right. It feels like the right time for the game to start. And now we're sitting here just having our fruit and our salad. And in my case, fruit and salad. I'm not sure what you had for dinner, but we're just sitting here just talking, and there's no game. It seems funny. Yeah. It's just like, this is just a dead period. The series aren't over yet, and we're just sitting here talking with nothing to watch or enjoy. It's just odd. It just seems odd to be in this position.
Wait, hold on a second. I'm just double checking the schedule. So Friday.
I think we lost you there just a bit. They're Popes.
Wait, so then, do you hear me now?
I think I hear you now. Yeah.
All right. So game four is Friday night. Game five is not Sunday. It's Monday.
Oh yeah, yeah.
They're not even playing we got to get this on Sunday night. It's a Monday night at 9 in Toronto.
That is weird. You're right. That is weird. It's not a holiday either. It's like, what?
Yeah, but it is the 2-2-1-1-1 format. So I guess maybe they're like, yeah, we need that extra.
But they did say
travel.
That. They did mention that. Yeah. I think that was one of the accommodations for 22111. They're just offering like extra off days, and that was part of the plan. But I do think that's a little. I mean, do you really need 2 days for travel between Toronto and Oakland? I mean, it's not that bad. Yeah. I mean, you've
flown. It's probably about a 5-hour flight.
Yeah, it's not the end of the world.
4.5 hours. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's not like you're playing that day. You're playing the next day. And you don't even play till like 6. 6 out here, because it's like assuming that they're playing in Oakland. So it's like, I don't know. That doesn't seem like they'll try to stretch for any concession they can get when it comes to the league, but. I don't know. I don't know about needing to go take 2 extra days between games just because it's 2-2-1-1-1. I mean, they didn't do it during the East Finals or the West Finals, right? So why would you need to do it? I mean,
I don't know.
Right? It's just like they're acting like they're taking like wagons to these games or trains. And they're taking these really fancy, very fast first class level flights, private jets.
They're charters, yeah.
Yeah. It's just like charter jet. You can leave whenever you want. There's no delays. This is getting a little over the top. I think they're fine. They'd be fine. I think they'd be fine. Although it is funny that we talk about the old 232, and a lot of people blame Red Auerbach for that because he kept moaning about it. But look, I'm glad we have 22111 again. I've begged for that for years. But I don't think we need this many days between all the games. I just think maybe in that period where you've got, let me think, maybe between game 5 and 6, maybe? But between 6 and 7, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I don't even think you need that. I don't even think it's necessary. So, yeah, anyway, the whole point of it, this is kind of weird. And it's kind of... Putting a game on a Friday is just odd. Like, Thursday just feels like an NBA night, doesn't it? I mean, we've been accustomed to big games on Thursdays forever. Like, you got the TNT Thursday game. You have opening night tends to be on a Thursday. And then you've had the NBA Finals games on Thursdays. But you're going to have a crucial game. What was it? Game 4? And that's going to be on a Friday. I don't know, Chris. I don't work for the league, but I just think that people try to go out on Fridays. It's an interesting decision.
You play game 2, you play game 3 tonight, then game 5 on Sunday. And that, because that's the travel split, right? Because you got game 4 to game 5 is going back to Toronto. Right, so you get an extra night off. Would have worked out perfectly, yeah. In my opinion.
That's true.
I don't know.
Thursday to Sunday would have been just fine. Like, you would have had the extra day, and you could have executed the amount of like a reasonable amount of rest between that transition between the 2 and the 2 and the 1. After that, I don't think it matters. It's kind of, I don't know. It's just superfluous, and from my point of view. So, that's gonna. I'm just going to be sitting on that one for a while. But yeah, let's talk about the predictions for the rest of the series. So you said it goes 7. I think it'll go 6. So I don't think it's going to be that quick a series. I think it'll go 6. But there is definitely a chance it goes 7. But I still think if there is a 7th game, I'm picking Golden State in that game. Because I feel like even though it's at home, I really feel like the pressure would be more on Toronto to get it done, because they know that the prospect of Kawhi leaving is very tangible. So they really, the fans will, the team will, the players will, they will all want that game, and just the pressure to win that game will be greater on their side. I mean, not to say that the Warriors don't have pressure to continue their greatness, but since they've been through it, they can manage that anxiety a little better. So that's just my layman's point of view. So, I'll say it goes 6. I think the Warriors win in 6. So You have it going 7. Who do you have winning in the 7?
Well, I mean, just to piggyback on that point, I mean, you know, once you see that you can lose a big game at home, like, I feel like there's more pressure on you to not let that happen again. Now, of course, right. You know, if Toronto wins game 3 in Oakland, then, you know, all bets are off. I think it goes 7. I still like the Warriors, but I wanted to go 7.
I do too.
I wanted to be extended. It's going to be cool. I want it to be a good series. I mean, right. game one was fun. Game two was fun, but not, like I said, not one for the archives, but, but it was fine. And, I just want an exciting series. And, you know, I mean, there's good storylines on both sides. If Toronto wins, I mean, this is, you know, obviously this is their first time in the finals. It'd be, you know, the East winning the championship, which doesn't happen a lot in the last 10 years. I mean, it's just kind of a rarity. But if Golden State wins, you know, you're just seeing one more notch in their belt. And you know, it's just one more claim to be, you know, one of the all-time great teams ever. So, so, you know, it's like I said, I don't have necessarily a rooting interest. I just, you know, I just want to see a great games and may the best team win.
Right on. Well, I'm afraid we are a little past the expiration on that whole Lakers expose, but you know, we've both said stuff about this already. It's pretty much was going over a lot of the details.
Forgot about that.
You did. Yeah. What can you say? What can you say? It pretty much confirmed a lot of stuff that we already suspected, and but at the same time, you look at a team, and while things look bad, and while the culture could not be in any worse shape, they do have the assets to be a pretty competitive team as long as they execute this offseason right. So it's really going to depend on that, and I have no idea whether it's going to go down or not. Chris, I do want to ask you about that Rob Pelinka story, the one where he claimed that. He could get Kobe a meeting with Heath Ledger, who was already dead by the time that they talked about that movie.
Maybe there was a Ouija board involved or something. I don't know.
The question is, was this an honest mistake? I don't know how you call this an honest mistake. He lied, but was this just an oversight? Is he really just that dumb, or was he actually trying to manipulate Kobe into thinking that he was still alive? That was an odd. I was listening to Low Post, which had the guy that wrote the article, and there was a little rumbling about how maybe there was that in play. And I'm like, no, you're giving him too much credit. I think he was just being a dumbass. Personally.
So like being a dumbass means he's like kind of bragging, like, oh, I could pull this together, and
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I hope that's what happened. I don't know. I it's just such a, it is a strange story.
Yeah.
The whole thing. I mean, you said it confirmed a lot of what we suspected, which is true. But I mean, one of the most alarming things in there was that line that Kurt Rambis's wife is kind of like the shadow owner.
Yeah. Yeah.
And she like, who knew this? Do you have any inkling that this was going on?
No,
like,
that was news to me as well. That was certainly a surprise.
It's like, what is going on there? She's like director of like special events or something.
Oh, it's nuts. It's nuts. So that was a sight to behold, that article, and all the credit to ESPN.
She had good friends with Riley. Yeah. It's a wild one.
Yeah, and you know, when guys like Christopher Mad Dog Russo are complaining about too much coverage of the Lakers, I'm like, I don't think he's wrong, but come on. I mean, this is just too much juice. Like, you can't let that go. And let me tell you something, and you know this because you listened to Mad Dog and Mike for many, many years. If that was the Yankees, he would love it. He would be all over it. He would read every single letter of that article. So I think he's being a little bit disingenuous with that rant.
I mean, look, it's arguably the crown jewel organization in the NBA, and it's in total disarray. I mean, how can that not be a story? I mean, come on.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Like, they hired their most high profile player during the decade of the 80s. And, you know, the most popular Lakers of all time. They hired him to run the team, and he abruptly resigns. And, you know, on the last day of the season, I mean, and there's all kinds of stories swirling around, and then this thing breaks, and it's even crazier than we thought. I mean, what are we supposed to do? Not talk about this? I don't get it. Should we talk about, you know, the Cavaliers and what's going on there? The Hornets? What's going on there? I mean, come on.
Yeah, I got you. Yeah.
I mean, and you can only devote so much attention to the finals. I love it, but you can only, you know, there's, you can only devote so much. You need some distractions, and this is entertainment. It's an entertainment world. And the Lakers are entertaining right now. What can you say?
Yeah, I know. I mean, and even all of us who are going through it, even as Laker fans, we can agree with that. This has been very, very entertaining these last few weeks.
I just, yeah, it's just.
I'm sorry, Chris, what was that?
I don't know. I didn't Pelinka. I was gonna say I didn't know all that much about Pelinka, and just like so he was Kobe's agent all these years, and so that was, I guess that was the reason he got the job, is just because he had formed a deep relationship with Jeannie and
that. Well, they were. But remember, they were saying that it had something to do with Linda Rambis. Like she had a big say in why he got hired.
That, oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah. That's right. He's friends with Linda Rambis.
And we don't even know why. Like, we have no background on that. We have no clue where that comes from. I mean, that
that's
is
bizarre.
Just,
that's no. right. That's right. You're right.
Why? Like, too much. Too much. Anyway.
Dave, we're 2 weeks away, and the Lakers have the fourth pick in the draft, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, we got to. I mean, get me to the draft. I mean, this is going to be fun. I mean, I know everyone's like focused on Zion and.
But it's really like a four-person draft, though, isn't it? It's like, well, okay, this guy, this guy, this guy, and this guy, and then everybody else is like, whatever, you know? It's like, so that first hour is going to be great, but the rest of it's going to be like, yeah, all right, we can watch something else.
I don't know.
You don't know?
I disagree, but.
All right.
I respectfully disagree, but. I think it's gonna be fun. Who do you think the Lakers are gonna take? I mean, you know, assuming the Knicks keep the pick and pick RJ Barrett, who do the Lakers pick it for?
Great question. Boy, what a good question.
I mean, what are you hearing? Like, what is the buzz? It sounds like the first three picks are etched in stone at this point.
Yeah. So we know that Zion obviously number one, that's easy. And then Ja Morant number two. And then you mentioned Barrett number three, or somebody number three. Yeah. So then
Barrett.
After that, I don't know. I have to go look at my Lakers sources and then all the Lakers websites and see if they have a feel for it, because the Kaminsky brothers probably have a feel for it. But like, I've been pretty dialed in the finals, so I haven't really looked into it. But
it's all good. I put you on the spot.
Yeah, that'd be good. It'll be a good, hour of television for sure. Once we get to it. But, you know, you can certainly get something out of it. And in a worst-case scenario, you can trade whoever you picked as part of a bigger deal to land someone else. So there are definitely options for the Lakers coming up. I think it works out. My real problem is the way that – now, I don't know how much of this is magic and how much of this is Pelinka. But remember the scenario where they were saying that they would just make decisions without asking everybody else. They just acted unilaterally no matter what these other people said. And it seemed like these other guys had good basketball people. Like, these other guys were good basketball people, and they just didn't bother consulting or talking to them at all. So that's very disturbing. But the question then is, was that, how much of that was magic and how much of that was Rob? I don't know. I think they're both pretty big dunderheads, to be honest. So I don't think it matters, but... Jeez.
I'm enjoying it. It's entertainment. I don't think we're talking about it too much.
Nah,
it's a big story.
We kept it to a minimum today. Today, that's good enough.
I'll repeat what I said last time. Mm-hmm. And you kind of brought it up. The Lakers, they still, you know, I mean, we don't know what Ingram's scenario back for the best. You know, that's the kind of thing that ends careers. Mm-hmm. And I hope that's not the case, because I like his game, and I think he made some big steps this year. But you know, the Lakers have a lot of chips to move. They want to. They have tons of cap. They have a good amount of cap space. You know, I mean, right. They're not. It's not like you could very easily see a scenario in which they're pretty good next year. You know, I mean, they still have LeBron, and they can make a lot of moves. So, yeah, I'm not throwing dirt on them, just to be clear, because they actually could be very good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it really does take a couple of key transactions, and suddenly they're going to be the team to, well, maybe not the team to beat, but they'll be a very big player in the Western Conference. So, yeah, I got to always remember that even as bit of a shit show, as big of a shit show as this is, they really have the tools to make a pretty good team out of themselves, provided that they execute this offseason. And it could happen. Even the worst run teams can still field the playoff team. You saw what the Knicks did back in, was that 2011? The one that had Tyson Chandler on it, the team,
yeah,
Melo.
Yeah, that's right.
May have been 2011. But so if they can get a playoff team, maybe the Lakers can get in the playoffs too. So that's a very good point. Let's enjoy the rest of the finals. I'm because of the way they stretch this out, I'm pretty sure we're going to have continuing coverage of the finals next week. So let's see. What game will that be? Five? Six?
Well, five. Yeah, because the game is on Monday, right? And that'll be game five, isn't what we said? Yeah, five.
Yeah, so we will be coming back on Tuesday.
Post game five.
After game five, yeah.
So, I mean, conceivably, the series could be over by then.
Yeah. Well, I really don't. I mean, I would be very surprised and really disappointed if the series was over after only five games with all this that we've been talking about. I mean, so from that standpoint, I hope that Toronto can win tomorrow. But if that's how, man, wouldn't that be something? That, boy. But I guess it could happen. I mean, we both established that the pressure's only going to get bigger for Toronto, especially being so inexperienced. It's their first ever NBA Finals as a franchise, so I don't know. I mean, does anybody win the NBA Finals on the first try? Let me think. The Heat did.
Yeah, the Heat did.
But I don't know if that counts. They had a veteran team. I'm not sure if that counts. I guess it kind of counts. Yeah, I guess so. But
I mean, I'd have to. I can't remember. I mean, I know the Warriors were in Philadelphia, and
well, they won in 75.
Yeah,
Rick Barry.
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
I guess that could have been like a first time attempt with that group, but I mean, like the first time, like the franchise's first appearance. The Magic didn't. The Jazz didn't. Jazz still haven't won a championship.
Rockets didn't.
Oh yeah, Rockets didn't. So the two championship runs, but they didn't win the finals either time in the 80s. Yeah, it's true. The Lakers probably did, because I know they had a three-peat going back to the late 40s. So they were in Minneapolis then. Maybe they did, but I don't know. But it's just, I think more often than not, the less experienced franchise tends to not win on their first try. Like the Cavs, first of finals, they got swept by San Antonio 4-0. So, and San Antonio did win in their first finals, but that was a weird year. That was a strike. That was a lockout shortened season.
Gosh, that's a good job out of you, San Antonio. Yeah.
Yeah. And did the Knicks win on their first attempt? I don't know.
I'm like real fuzzy on old NBA history, like, you know, 50s, 60s. Well, I mean, what was the Knicks' first? I mean, I know they won in 72.
They won in 70 against the Lakers.
70.
Yeah, so
70 and 72.
Yeah.
Didn't win.
No, yeah. It was 70 and 73. 72, the Lakers beat the Knicks, yeah.
That's right, yeah, yeah.
But
it was 70, that couldn't have been their first time in the finals, was it? Maybe it was.
Well, I was thinking of, not 69, not 68, I don't think. I'll go look it up just to make sure, but let's see. 1968 NBA Finals. No, it was Lakers-Celtics as well, so that's a no. Well, let me go. Let's see. Wikipedia will help me with this. So let's go to 1970. Gosh, this is very interesting. I don't know. Let's.
It's a good trivia question, Dave.
Yeah. When was the first Knicks NBA Finals appearance? Because it's not even just the 70s. Like they could have been in there way back in like the 40s, back in the day. That's the thing you got to look at. So, I don't know. I'll go look. Let me see. History results. Who did they beat? No. I want the actual results. I don't want. Yeah, I'll get to it later. But you get the idea. I feel like experience matters in the NBA, and so I think that's why I feel like the Warriors have an edge. But I don't rule it out because, again, the one thing we can say positively about Toronto. There are many things to say positively about the Raptors, but they're fighters. I think even when they gave up that 18-0 run, they did fight back, and they were really inching closer and closer to tying it up at least. So I'm not going to necessarily write them off. I just feel like, as I said, they're going to be fighting from behind the rest of the way.
I got a couple things for you. One,
okay.
The Warriors did win in their first appearance in the NBA Finals because it was the very first NBA Finals and it was the Philadelphia Warriors.
Oh, sure. 46, right? Again,
it was the 46 season and the
finals? Maybe 46, 47.
47, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, so the Knicks made the finals three straight years, 51, 52, 53, lost all three times.
Oh, wow. So they didn't win the first time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you count the number of franchises that are active right now, how many of them won the title on their first attempt? And you had one with the Warriors. I don't even know if the Celtics won in their first attempt. Let's go see.
They did. They did,
okay.
57.
The Lakers did as well, 1949.
The Bullets won. The Lakers
That's a trivia question. The Washington Wizards won the first attempt at a championship. How about that?
Yeah.
That is something.
And it looks, the Rochester Royals, too, who are now the Sacramento Kings.
Yep. So that's two. Three, actually, because we had Philadelphia. Now, the Syracuse Nationals, do you know who they wound up becoming in the end?
Sixers.
The Kansas Sixers,
Sixers, yep.
But they didn't win on their first attempt.
No.
They didn't even win on their second attempt. They won on the third in 55. So we're only have three right now. The Pistons didn't win. The Hawks didn't win. Celtics, you mentioned they won in their first try. We'll roll through this. The Lakers did. Oh, the Lakers did, so that's four. That's right. And the Warriors.
And the Bucks won it in their first appearance.
71. Yeah, and they beat Baltimore in that series. That was pretty dominant. That was some pure domination. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, I think he was still Luau Thunder back then, but they crushed. It was them and Len Elmore and somebody else, I think. And I don't know if the Big O was there yet. No, it is. It actually was there. Okay. So the Big O and those guys, that was like, they're not losing.
You know what's crazy is Gene Shue was the coach of the Bullets that year. That was 71.
Wow.
I mean, I remember him coaching the Clippers in the mid-80s.
Oh, wow. That's right. I remember the name, too. You're right. That's right. Yeah. I do remember that. That's funny. Let's see. So, Suns didn't win on their first try. Great series, though. Wow. That went against the Celtics.
Yeah.
Sonics didn't, but then they won, like, literally the next year.
Yep.
Portland did, and Portland wasn't around very long at that point, so that must have been some day. That must have been some year. That's how great Bill Walton was. We talked about Bill Walton in the previous show, how great he was, but that dude healthy would have, I think he would have, on whatever team he's on, would have won multiple championships. He was just, he was really good. Like, there's no doubt. Like, it's just too bad about the injuries.
No. There's only a few, Dave. I mean, we got like five teams, I think.
Yeah. So we're through, like,
Spurs. Yeah, the Spurs were the good. That was a good one.
Yeah, Spurs is a very deep cut. That's a deep cut, definitely. I mean, the Pacers didn't, because they made it in 2000, didn't win.
And the Spurs are also the only ABA franchise to win an NBA title too, right?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Because it was the Nets, Spurs, Nuggets, and Pacers, right?
Right.
Those are the four teams.
Correct.
So they're the only ABA team that's won a title.
That was a big. That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. I hope that one other one does. It might be a while before Denver does. I don't know why. I just don't feel like that team can be taken that seriously yet. It's just kind of, they need some more pieces, I think, to make that happen. But overall, yeah, I mean, I think we get the summary. Like, did the Bulls win the championship on the first try? I guess they did, right? Because they didn't even make it until 91 against my Lakers. And then they won. The problem before was that they couldn't get to the finals, and then once they did, they won. So that's another one. So, yeah, we're only up to about half a dozen teams out of 30.
Wow, the Bulls did. You're right. You're absolutely right. The Bulls won it on their first try.
That was really crazy because game one, Sam Perkins hit a dagger at the end of that game in Chicago Stadium to win game one for the Lakers, and they did not win the rest of the series. That was it. Isn't that weird? Like, they lose four straight games after that. Three of them at the Forum, too. One of them went to overtime. That's crazy.
Yeah.
So that's kind of tough. That was kind of a tough ending, but there you go. So that's your history. That's the kind of odds that Toronto faces. I think they can win it, but as I mentioned, gosh, it would have been a much easier road if they had won that game. But I think they'll be all right. I mean, I think the experience is going to be a positive one no matter what happens here. Do you think that Toronto wins either of the two games? I think they'll win one. I just don't know which one yet. It could be tomorrow. Could be the game after.
I'm calling for it to go. Oh, you're saying either the two games in
just these two in Oracle, yeah.
Just these next two in Oracle.
Yeah, like one of the two.
Yeah, I'll say they split. I say they split and they go back to Toronto and it's 2-2. And then it's a best of three with the 2-2, with the 1-1-1 format. Let's say that. And that'll be really exciting because then both teams will have lost a home game.
Mm-hmm.
And Toronto beat them in their building this season, I think. If I'm not mistaken. I think they did.
Yeah. I know Milwaukee did, but... I believe you're right. Let me go check.
Yes.
Gotta love it. Let me go look this up. See, I gotta get the regular season schedule. See if I got it here. Okay. Opponent. Oh, I can actually select the opponent right here. Okay, so this will be really quick. Let me get that information. One second. Regular season. Toronto. Oh, there we go. Yeah. Look at that. They did lose. Wednesday, December 12th at Oracle Arena, they lost 113-93. Wasn't close.
Just to be clear, Toronto won 113-93.
That is correct, yeah.
Yeah.
Toronto won the game. Man, that is... Yep. There must have been something on an injury or something, but I think I remember that happened. Like, I don't remember the circumstances. I just remember that it happened, that they won, and they won by a good amount of points, so... Look at this. So that's a good sign. I thought that I remember something like Toronto had won their last four games against the Warriors too. Both playoffs and regular season. So very, very interesting stuff. So that's fine. I think we'll see. Should be fun. What are you going to be at home for game four or game three? I'm sorry.
I'm always home, Dave.
All right, fair enough. I will be home.
I'll be home tomorrow night watching this.
I'll be home too. Yeah.
Oh, wait, game four? You said game three?
No, I meant game tomorrow three. I'm sorry. I meant game
three. Yeah, game three. I'll game be home. Three, yeah. I'll be home Friday night too. I'll be watching on my couch.
Very nice. Very nice. yeah. So I'll definitely, I can't speak for what I'll be doing Friday yet. I'm probably going to be out of the bar though. Pretty good chance I'll be at a bar for game four. Game three, most likely I'll be home. So that'll be a fun day. Just got to get through the work day and then, everything gets good from there. So, very good. All right, Chris. Well, that was fun. And
enjoyed it. That's always. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Have a good evening, and we'll do it again next week. Hopefully by then we still have finals to talk about. I don't want it to be over yet, so should be good.
Yeah, and then the roller coaster ride begins. We got the draft in July 1. We're less than a month away from free agency, so that's gonna be exciting.
That's big. And do you like the new deadline where it's not in the middle of the night anymore,
or whatever it was? Wait, what time is it?
Let me see, because they said that it's not at some weird time anymore. NBA, free agency deadline. It's a new time. Like they changed.
Well, you do get those weird things, because I remember, was it 2 years ago when Gordon Hayward was like 4th of July was signing a contract with the Celtics?
Right.
You run into those holidays in the summertime.
That was very weird. That was very weird. Let's see. Oh, come on. Oh, okay. Here we go. Thanks to the, I don't have it. So
it's all right. It's like in the afternoon or something like that.
They basically moved it from late night to the afternoon. That was the idea. Okay. So I'm trying to figure out the time, like you know how they have the moratorium. Yeah. It says that the moratorium ends at 11 a.m. July 6th Central Time, which means 12 o'clock p.m. That's a big improvement. That's a big improvement. And so maybe this time we won't be having a bunch of NBA free agency news in the middle of our barbecue, yeah?
Definitely.
I'll take that. It means a little longer to wait. I'm good with it. It should be fun. Okay, Chris. Well, have a great weekend and all the best to your family, too. So keep eating, having those great peaches. I'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good, Dave. Thanks again.
All right, bud. Take care.
Bye.
Goodbye. Thank you, Chris. And that's our show tonight. Hope you enjoyed it. A reminder, in about a week and a half, we're going to have the top 5 DITCOW episodes of 2014 special. Our DITCOW retrospective, continuing our 10 years of DITCOW season-long celebration. I am Dave Mandini. You can find us on Twitter at DITCOW, on the web at DITCOW.com, and on Facebook, look up Dave in the City Out West. Have a good weekend. Enjoy the funnels. We will see you next time.